It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. It's a very busy March and there is very little time for chit-chat. So let's keep these intros fast. Ger Flanagan, how are you?
Great, Rob. Yeah, delighted to be back.
Your eyes are looking above the laptop. And I know why, Ger, because Manchester United are on somewhere in the background beyond that screen.
I may have it on, all right. Yeah. And so if you do hear a scream or a roar, it's the 83rd minute now, the minute we're trailing 1-0. That's not going too well. And is there a worse team in the whole entire world to be trailing than Atletico Madrid? The biggest shithouses in professional football, in my opinion. Yeah,
we were there last year, Ger, I have to say, and they're a hard watch. Oh.
That's great, lads.
I think they're like the Tyrone, maybe, of soccer world.
As a Burnley fan, I really understand all your frustrations because whenever we do something, we get all those same comments. But anyways, we don't do anything these days. Stephen Drake, our listeners have heard from you and I know they don't want to listen to too much soccer talk. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, delighted to be back with my buddy here. We haven't seen each other for a while, so let's get into it. After it.
Two lads who probably have crossed paths on the football fields of Mayo at least once or twice. I don't know. They can tell me those stories on another day. But in the meantime, once, Ger said. So that's once is enough, perhaps.
I'm a lot older. Yeah.
Only last year. Yeah.
Ger's one of the senior voices.
We were only seniors last year, Rob. So
yeah, exactly. Well, fair enough. I don't know. I thought you might have drifted over for a challenge game. Enough of this. We are waffling on a busy week. I could do better. We've got to get the standards up in these podcasts. We're so busy. Mayo beaten by Kerry, getting on to play Tyrone. What we know off the top is all going well. One more win for Mayo this weekend should do it. We think if Kerry beat Armagh, it will do it. In all things considered, you'd imagine. So yeah, not a bad position to be despite the loss, Stephen. League final still very much within their grasp.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, look, there's plenty of positives out of the game of the weekend. And, you know, as I said last week, it's not going to be the end of the season if we were to lose the game by any stretch. A disaster, absolutely not. So, you know, it's still in our own hands. You know, a win at the weekend, if results go the right way, we'll see us into a league final. And if we win the two games, we are guaranteed to be in the league final. So it's a really nice position to be in. And look, I think the guys are going to go for it. I think the extra game will do us good. And look, the chance to win another national title, we won't turn that opportunity up. So I expect to see, you know, a really focused and driven Mayo team this weekend.
On today's podcast, you're going to hear from Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent in a little while. We'll talk Tyrone because he was watching them play Dublin and the poor performance really overall from Tyrone that game. We'll talk GPA dispute with the GAA a little bit as well. That's something the lads will want to weigh in on as well a little bit later in the podcast. We'll be championing a new sponsor on our podcast, the Oxford Arms in London, friends of the podcast, a place where we spent a great night before the All-Ireland football final. I always get the year mixed up in which one we went over. I'll say 2017, and I'm sure John Gunn is going to be listening to this going, it was Ger Flanagan's held his Thomas, so I was right. And what an amazing night that was. So hopefully down the line, another light coming down the way, but you'll hear them mentioned along the way. So that's good news. But Ger, we want to get stuck into the fact that, you know, some people said the two best teams in the country were met last week in Tralee. Whether that's true overall, it was certainly true at that point in the season. What's your first take on it? Did Kerry come out worthy winners? Have they gone up in your estimation?
I don't think they've gone up in my estimation. I would have estimated them obviously pretty high from this season alone. They've looked sharp, but so have Mayo. I think I was disappointed coming out of it that we didn't get a draw. Coming down the stretch with 15 minutes left and the way Mayo were finishing games this year, I thought we were actually going to nick it. So my initial feeling after the full-time whistle was a bit disappointment that we just didn't get over the line, given how well we finished games this season. And then obviously very disappointed to lose it in the manner that we did to kind of a soft free. But, you know, I think as Drakey said, I don't think, you know, if they get to a league final, it'll be great. And if they win it, it'll be fantastic. If they don't, it won't be the end of the world. I think that feeling is quite similar maybe to the Kerry game. I think obviously they'll be disappointed to lose the Kerry. You'd never like to lose to any, but particularly a team who you're very likely to meet at the hot end of the championship next year. But I think James Horan coming away from the game would have been, you know, I think quietly happy with what he saw.
There will be loads to pick apart, but let's start with Billy Joe Patton's cut. Stephen, where he talked today about a positive that emerged 24 hours later as he thought about the game, which is Mayo's, what he felt was dominance in the middle third. And I guess the way I saw it in the ground was first half, Mayo caught a lot of really good ball, you know, really disrupted Kerry's kick out. And even in the second half, when Dermot O'Connor came more into it, Kerry's Dermot O'Connor, that is, Mayo was still breaking ball really well. Jordan Flynn was doing that. So yeah, speak to that. And do you agree with Billy Joe that that's something that Jack O'Connor might be concerned by?
Yeah, I do. And again, we spoke about it last week, you know, Kerry's lack of firepower in the middle of the park, most notably in the engine room itself. And again, Mayo, you know, for long periods held sway last weekend, you know, and you point to Matty, obviously. Like, Matthew is probably, he's the form midfielder in the country at the moment. I think nobody would really argue with that. I think Brian Fenton had his best game of the year last weekend and looked far more influential. But in terms of form, Matthew Horan is probably the best midfielder in Ireland at the moment. And we were impressive in this area. Like again, Jordan Flynn, you know, he mixed, you know, the sublime with the ridiculous at times of the weekend. But he's at a really good league. He's developing well. Look, we're always strong then in our middle eight, you know, our halfback line, whatever form it takes, typically is, you know, is a source of go forward ball for us and a source of you know, go forward momentum. Our half forward line has been playing well. Jeremy has had his best start of the year for a number of years. Obviously Fergal Boland had a fine game at the weekend. And I thought Jack Carney played well in spots for the duration he was on. So like we had a lot of joy around there the last day. Now a couple of different things. Again, it wasn't all right, and you know, some, you know, I noticed like Kerry aggressively targeted that area, you know, when we were in possession. Because you know, knowing that what we've done in the previous games and looking to kick from that area, I think Kerry thought, you know, they'd put a lot of heat on there and prevent that sort of nice out ball we've been using. And then it was difficult to kick over that pressure, you know, given the conditions. They also targeted that area because, again, we commit so many, you know, players to the transition. You know, if they do get a turnover there, you can release guys inside in one-on-one situations. So look, we need to be cognizant of that moving forward. But you know, look, for the main, it was a very, very, you know, good outing for our middle third, and for long periods we dominated that area.
What do you reckon about the extension to that point though, Ger, where Billy Joe was suggesting that by putting Oisin Mullen and David Clifford, he made what seems a salient point that had Pádraig O'Hara been on him the whole game, would he really have done much worse than conceding 5 points and maybe 8 good scoring chances? And could you have released Oisin Mullen up the field? What do you think?
I think it's very, very hard to know. I don't personally think Pádraig O'Hara matches up very well with Clifford. You know, I think obviously Oisin had a very difficult task on him, but I think he matches up quite well because he's pace, you know, really, really, really quick, blinding pace, and he's strong. O'Hara is a tough tackler. He's a tight marker, but doesn't have the explosive pace that Oisin Mullen does. But like, therein saying that, like, I saw people suggesting that David Clifford doesn't have pace in the lead up to the Mayo game. And like, is there ever a bigger misconception than that? Because it, like, he looked every bit as fast as Oisin Mullen when he was taking him on. And I that's why I feel Pádraig O'Hara would have struggled on him. I'm going to go back to the point he got in the second half. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe on the 50th minute, where he took the ball underneath the stand side, took Oisin Mullen on up by the end line, shrugged him off as if he wasn't even there, and stuck that point over the bar. Like, that is unmarkable. Mm. So in that instance, it doesn't matter whether Lee Keegan is marking him in his prime, whether Oisin Mullen is marking him, or whether Pádraig O'Hara is marking him. You know, that kind of talent, strength, pace, And ball skill is exceptional. I don't think it was a matchup. I'd rather see Oisin Mullen up the field, but you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Interesting kind of system. Stephen, anything to add to that, or what's your feeling over the Oisín Mullen challenge.
I completely agree with Ger. Look, it's damage limitation with Clifford. You look at the alternative in this regard. He kicked 4 points in play the last day on probably our best defender. Missed another couple as well. So he could have had conceivably 5 or 6 points from play. You know, what is the alternative from our perspective? You know, we put a lesser guy on him and he takes him for 2-5, 2-6. It's not an option, really. You know, so in my opinion with this guy, you load heavy on him, you put your best defender on him, and you either look to play a sweeper or, you know, you put ferocious pressure on the ball carrier, or you play your back six a little bit deeper to cut off the space in front of him. But absolutely not. No, you have to put your best defender on him. He's the best forward he's the best player in the country. And he's going to be the best forward of all time, barring injury, in my opinion. I've said that now and I'm sticking to it. You know, I think he'll win 10 All-Stars. So he's out of this world. So yeah, no, absolutely not. I totally agree with you.
You're not subscribing to some Mayo fans' thoughts that David Clifford's a little overrated, or even Tony Lean's thoughts last week that he'd pick Sean O'Shea over David Clifford. Did you disagree with that? Would you pick David Clifford over Sean O'Shea?
I'd pick Dave. If Jesus Christ was reincarnated, I'd pick David Clifford over him. Bro. That's the reality. You know, he's the greatest forward. He's just turned 23 years of age. He's 3 All-Stars, one. If they go anywhere deep in the challenge this year, he'll be his 4th one. He'll be the first footballer to win 10 All-Stars. He's absolutely incredible.
Fully agree.
Brilliant. So in fairness, Oisín Mullen, 5 points he scored off Oisín Mullen the last day. I mean, you know, how bad was that performance? I saw Oisín
got
6.
That's a good day.
Yeah, it's not bad, which gets to Jura's point earlier that Oisín had to face. There's a couple of other things I want to cover with you, but I want to welcome in Colm Keyes to our podcast. Colm, friend of the podcast, as we all know, first time back since we were chatting to you pre-league. So how are you getting on?
Very good, Rob. Thank you very much for the invite. I just came in on that Clifford conversation. Very, very interesting. Probably sentiments I wouldn't find myself disagreeing with. He's capable of anything. I think it was 2 years ago, wasn't it? Oisín Mullen pretty much did a decent job on him in a league match.
But that Oisín's one of Oisín's early games for Mayo too.
Yeah, and Oisín Mullen had marked Conor McManus in that sequence as well. And you thought, you know, he's really got a handle on some of these best players. But Clifford, even then, and Clifford now are probably two different players. And Clifford was brilliant that year. That's 2020. That's the only year he didn't get an All-Star. And he got a nomination that year. And obviously, I'm on the selection committee. He got a nomination. People were up in arms at it. He was absolutely brilliant in the league. And he just had a bad day in Páirceachaoin. And even with that bad day, he was still decent enough. But he had enough misses clocked up that day for it to make a difference by some distance. So even then, when he's supposed to have had a down year, I thought he was magnificent. But I have to agree, I think he's getting on to a different level now. When he scores 6 points and Oisín Mullen's in his company, obviously two of them are frees, but one of them he actually won off him. When he scores 6 points against Oisín Mullen, you really feel, is there any holding? And obviously Sean Meehan held him last year in the Munster final to have them scoreless. Clifford only scored a free. But then he came out in the All-Ireland semi-final against Tyrone. And no matter what Ronan McNamee did with him, he just couldn't get close enough to him. I've never seen a player to get shots off as quick. I think that's the secret to Clifford, is that he gets his shots off. He doesn't need time, or a lot of time, to set himself up for a shot. And he just gets them away. And I think that's the biggest trick he has in his locker, that he can just whisk away shots so quickly, and it's almost impossible to defend.
Actually had a good argument with one of the lads the last day, like, would Lee Keegan in his prime, talking, you know, Jim McConnelly, Man American era, would he handle Clifford? Give him a good rattle, but I don't know.
He would give him a good go. There isn't any doubt about that. I think he conceded a lot of frees to him too. That's the other side of it. I mean, obviously Lee played on the line, and just the way referees look towards Clifford, it's a little bit more precarious now maybe than it was with Connolly in that era. Clifford will be very much a protected species in Gaelic football, I feel.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, I also think he's so hard to foul, or, you know, he's so strong. I think his physicality is just the final kind of element. But listen, on that then, you know, how Kerry are going to win in All-Ireland comes down to, you know, the supporting cast to a large degree. Can they build enough of a platform to get through tricky finishes in tight games? Can they hold their composure if Clifford gets injured in a game like he did against Tyrone last year? Those kind of things. So Billy Joe was suggesting, Colm, and our listeners have already heard this, but I'm just interested in your take on this, that Mayo had the edge in the middle third, the last day, throughout the whole game, and it's something that James Horan will take away as a positive and Jack O'Connor will still be slightly concerned by. What's your take on that?
I would think that's probably correct. I think Matthew Ruan, and he's a guy obviously we spoke about in an earlier podcast and even last year, flagging just his improvement all the time. And he didn't have the greatest All-Ireland finals last year against two very physical players. That was one thing you would note. But against Kerry, and he seems to thrive against Kerry because he had those two games in the league against them in 2020 when he was very, very good. And he was very good the other night as well. A really powerful ball carrier. And he's adding a very, very, very nice finish to his game too. Two points the last day. I think it was off left and right, if I'm not mistaken. And he's adding a lot to his, a lot of power ball carrying the ball through the middle of defence. As I thought, Kerry struggled to cope. I'd be a bit disappointed with the Kerry midfield, and I think there will be adjustments there down the line. I would see Dermot O'Connor, as this being a very, very big year for Dermot O'Connor. I think he has all the skills. Thought he was very good against Monaghan. I was at that game in the Skeen 2 weeks earlier. He has all the skills. He has the hands. He has the feet. Does he have the presence in the way that Matthew Ruan has it? He doesn't have that yet. He may be a little bit younger, but not much. There's not a huge amount. I think, what's Matthew Ruan now? Is he 24 or 5?
He will be 25. Yeah, he was minor in 2000, or under 21 in...
In 16,
yeah, well, actually, that would be a year younger. Maybe
26, yeah. So he's probably, anyway, Dermot O'Connor, he's a bit to go yet physically. I would have had big hopes for him as being one of the main bridgeheads, shall we say, from Kerry last year to Kerry this year. But it is a concern for them that they just haven't got that presence just yet. The loss of Stephen O'Cunbar, that's significant enough, given that he could have added a physical presence. Obviously, maybe not from the start. And David Moran hasn't come back yet. And like any missing players at present, championship is just over 4 weeks away. It's hard to believe that we're actually saying that, but that's the reality, that there are big games, and there's big games for Mayo and Galway, obviously, in that time frame. So if players aren't back by now, well, then you'd have to raise a question mark over what contribution, certainly in the earlier part of the championship, they're going to be able to make. But yeah, I think that's one thing that Kerry, the Mayo did. And I thought Jordan Flynn offered a physical presence. He lost a bit of ball at times as well, but he offered a firm physical presence there. And I don't think he was as rash as maybe he has been in other games that I've seen him play. I thought there was a bit more control about what he was doing with his possession, even though he did lose it and it was costly. But I thought he offered a good presence there beside Matthew Ruan. Yeah, I think they are. I think it's been a good league for Mayo so far. Obviously, results wise, but it looks so far like last year's All Ireland final defeat hasn't taken a whole lot out of them. In fact, it's taken nothing out of them if you're to judge on performances so far. Obviously, the loss of Tommy Conroy, and I'm sure you guys have spoken about this at length over the last few weeks, but he really does offer just something different inside there and the inside line. And Ryan O'Donoghue he's been terrific. And his ability to trap a ball, to actually stop a ball and control it coming in, you don't see many players with that skill. James McCartan from Down was brilliant at it. Just whatever ball you threw at him, it stuck. You think it's gone over his head, it doesn't. It just lodges into his chest. He's very, very similar, and he's a pugnacious sort. He doesn't back away from anything, and he doesn't never seems to appear to say, well, I've done my bit here now, and I'm going to sit off here for 5 or 10 minutes. He's always going. He's a dynamo, keeps going, and he's really leading that line there. And it's just a shame that Conroy, and also, obviously, Killian O'Connor, aren't in there beside him. For a while, they did play together in the 2020 championship. Conroy and Ryan O'Donoghue are 2 years older now, or at least 18 months older than that. And they've a lot of football played now over the last two seasons, I suppose. And it just would have been interesting to see that dynamic between the three of them in a full forward line. But all around, there's a lot of Mayo players that are very much holding their form. I thought Dermot O'Connor has had a couple of good games now. Very impressed with him against Dublin, obviously. And they've been very, very assured. Right back to Rob Henley. There's no fallout from the All Ireland for him either. He's really delivered. So they're in a good position and really developing players. And you know, they look to have a team that's going to be competitive this year and even into next year as well. I think that's pretty much guaranteed.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
I have two defenders on the podcast. So something for the clubhouse section of the podcast, especially for our Patreon listeners. I'm going to ask them, just circling back to Oisín Mullen trying to mark David Clifford, whether Ger Flanagan in Ball or whether Stephen Drake in Ballardrine days had to handle one player. So they're both going to just go away in their minds for a split second. And who was the one player they had to mark a couple of times and try and keep down to something less than like 5 points? I'm going to be interested to hear stories from that. But more on that anon. That's for later. For now, lads, starting with you, Ger. Stephen, will you dive in afterwards? But the bottom line here is you could have a triangle of Mayo attack, you know, Ryan O'Donoghue alongside them. So a quartet, if you like, with Jason Doherty, Killian O'Connor and Tommy Conroy clearly being first choice in a championship structure. Those three players are all serious doubts for Galway now. They have to be, obviously Tommy Conroy's out, sorry, forgive me, but Jason Doherty and Killian O'Connor have to be serious doubts at this stage, don't they, Ger?
Yeah, and like, you know, it is mad. You know, Cullum highlighted there, we're only 4 weeks from championship. It's not a lot of time. You're not going to fit, you know, you're going to fit two hard weeks of training in between, which have, you know, obviously league coming up to that as well. So, you know, that's a kind of treacherous enough space of time for inter-county managers to be testing players who are only coming back from injury, you know, like particularly Killian. Whatever about Jason, the fact that he has played this year, he's obviously been training up until a number of weeks ago when he tweaked the hamstring again, from what I'm told. You know, I think the real concern is Killian being so long out at this stage. You know, I think everyone expected him to be back at this stage, and it's getting dangerously close to the championship game, and he hasn't kicked the ball. How close is he? Is he close enough to get some minutes against the Tyrone? Is that the game you want to play him in? You know, ideally, would you just want to throw him in against a challenge game, get 20 minutes into his legs there and then? Is he available? I don't know. If you're going to call it now, you'd have to say that he's not going to be ready for championship, given the fact that, you know, obviously O'Donoghue is spearheading the attack now. Fergal Boland has thrown in a trick card there and put his hand up for contention, I think, if he keeps going towards the latter stages of this league. I think Aidan Norm has showed enough over the last few weeks to potentially start for the championship. You know, does James Horan now say, right, look, I kind of have to get the idea of Killian being back and starting from a championship, focus on these lads here and, you know, hope and pray that you might get Killian for 15 minutes.
That's a huge blow though, Stephen, from where we hoped we'd be, let's say after the Donegal game, to where we are now in terms of firepower.
Yeah, it is 100%. You know, look, the expectation, the anticipation was that you could have been lining out, with, as Colm said, with Killian, Ryan and Tommy. And I've said a number of times, that's probably the most exciting full forward line I've seen in all my time watching Mayo, potentially. So, you know, look, we are where we are and you can't do anything to change that. Ultimately, Killian has had a very, very serious injury, and these injuries, you know, they can ebb and flow in relation to how you recuperate and recover from them. You know, Tommy was a freak accident. Unfortunately, these things happen. And then, you know, again, Doc, again, very, very common with people coming back from cruciate injuries that they get niggles elsewhere, or, you know, tweak a hammer, etc. So look, we are who we are in that regard. We're 5 weeks out. Like, what's realistic from Killian's perspective? We don't know, because ultimately it's all speculation. So, you know, we were told a number of weeks ago he was in a good place. been rumoured he's had a little setback. You know, to what extent that is, we don't know. I would say, really, and I agree with Ger, he probably needs to feature in the last league game to have a realistic chance. And then you'd hope, obviously, if you met a league final, then, you know, it would be an extra game and he could get in for that. But, like, the injury itself, it's a horrible, horrible injury. Now, I never ruptured my Achilles, but I had a lot of Achilles trouble for a long time. And it's so debilitating, you know, like, it's not the type of thing you can wrap or strap up or try and play through. Like, the level of pain you have to endure to try and get through an injury like that is exceptional. So it is concerning. And I think, look, the most important thing is here, we protect the player ultimately. And if he isn't to be rushed, he's not to be rushed. And we need to get him back at some stage this year at his best. And hopefully that's sooner rather than later. But at this point in time, it's not looking likely, I would say.
Colin, moving that on then, in terms of what Mayo are trying to do, like, Fergal Boland kicked 3 points the last day, and we'll talk to the lads a bit about that in a second. Aidan Orm is winning a lot of ball, as Billy Joe said, missed a couple of chances in the first half, could have been key. Can Mayo build an attack that's an All-Ireland contending attack without the names that we're talking about there?
I think that'll be a struggle, Rob. I do think that will be a struggle. I think you need two of those three players, and that's a big assumption that Killian O'Connor will even return to the player that he was and how magnificent he was in 2020. That's a big assumption, given the nature of that injury, because I actually have suffered a ruptured Achilles a number of years ago. And even to this day, now obviously I wouldn't have engaged in the level of physio or anything like it. Mine was repaired and that was it. I got on with it. It's a very, very sore, very, very sore and very long process. And there is no guarantee now that Killian O'Connor would come back in as good as he was, because it does take a lot, especially at the level that he's at, to really get back to the player and the athlete he was, because it's obviously a very, very important part of the body, load bearing and all of that. So it's a big assumption to make that he'd be there without two out of three missing. I think it'd be very, very difficult, notwithstanding that Aidan Orm is making progress from his club championship form with Knockmore, and he's a stylish player. There's a nice move to him. Whether he has the real cut and thrust for that level yet, probably not. Fergal Boland has been in and out for a while on the team through the hands of a number of managements, obviously, too. I thought he played well the last day. One of the points he took, certainly out the outside of the boot, was very, very impressive. But can he sustain that? Is his best position inside, or is it out in the half forward line? I just don't think on an inside line that he would be up to that, what the others could potentially bring. So without two of them, I think it'd be difficult for Mayo to really build an All-Ireland winning run. But obviously they've coped without Killian last year and are coping fine without the two at the moment in the league. So we'll wait and see. But I think it would be difficult at the very highest level.
Stephen, were you surprised to see Fergal taken off in those closing stages after what everyone felt was like a good performance?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, it was a really good performance. He played well, kicked three, fisted one, kicked two points, and the one Colin mentioned was exceptional, outside of the right, off the left-hand side. Look, you know, two went before him, you know, so Aidan Orm and Jack Kearney were pulled before Fergal. Realistically, Ryan is not going to be coming off. Killian, you know, Diarmuid is not going to be coming off. I'd say it probably was a call between himself and Aido, and I'd say they probably, you know, wanted to leave that physicality on the pitch for the last up the home stretch. And again, we don't know in relation to what the GPS was telling them. So again, a lot of it gets boiled down to that at this point in time. But he again, you know, you lost that bit of creativity, you lost that bit of a scoring threat. That's what he brings. You know, he is a really good scorer, both at club and at county level when he has gotten his opportunity. But the biggest concern I would have would be if he didn't start the next day, right? So I wouldn't crib too much about him being taken off 5 minutes from the end of a game against Kerry, especially as it was his first start in the year. I think he offered a lot, and I think, again, with the ground firming up, that'll play to his strengths moving forward. So my concern would be if he didn't start next weekend after kicking 3 points and having a really, really good game. I wouldn't lose too much sleep over the fact that he was taken off 5 minutes from the end and there was two guys pulled before him. You know, I think it was flip a coin situation between himself and Ado, and they chose the physicality for the last 5 minutes.
Ger, what's Fergal Boland like on a football field? You played against him. You really admire him as a footballer. But like, I saw him win a lot of ball that was important link ball. For example, Dermot O'Connor's really good goal chance and Murphy made a great save. Boland had a key part to play in that. So it wasn't just his scoring ability. You're a big fan. So I suppose his performance didn't surprise you. Is this a turning point for him as well?
I think it's probably too early to say it's a turning point. Yes. But to be honest, I was surprised to see him playing in the full forward line with me. I didn't think that Horn was going to give him the opportunity there, even though that's where he plays his club football for Ahamore. That's where he does his damage. That's where he did his damage against us last year in the senior club championship. But like, as a footballer, technically excellent, all round. Obviously, he can score, and you know, I think definitely doesn't get as much praise that he probably deserves for his scoring return for Mayo. It's always excellent. He's always guaranteed, you know, to get a point or two. Really, really good engine. Has the athletic capabilities of Jermot O'Connor. That's why I think wing forward is his position in an inter-county team. Really good man to read a game, can pick up them breaks, and he can kick pass. He can deliver the ball inside. I thought he was excellent the last day in the full forward line. Going back to what Drakey said as well, I wasn't surprised to see him taken off. Initially, I was. You're thinking, right, he's got 3 points, he's in form, we need scores. But then when you think about it after the game, when everything's calmed down a bit, I think it was the right move. I don't think it was the right time to take Aidan O'Shea off. We needed him around the middle. And obviously, Ryan O'Donoghue wasn't going to come off. So I know there was a bit of hysteria after about taking him off. I think it was the right decision. I think he put a shift in, and I hope to see him the next day. Is he going to play corner forward in the Cum Championship? Is he the option there? I'm not too sure. I would like to see him play wing forward the next day, but it's anyone's call.
All right, Colm, what's your thought process on impact subs and having a player like Aidan O'Shea, for example, as an impact sub only? Is that something that's a realistic way to approach the summer? Because a lot of people have seen his one start this year and said, no, still prefer him in that impact role, despite the fact that he probably was one of Mayo's better players the last day. So how do you square this circle for Mayo people?
Well, if the number of bodies that you're talking about are out, obviously Tommy Conroy is out and Killian O'Connor may not be there, and possibly not Jason Doherty. You know, it'd be very, very hard to omit Aidan O'Shea, and his form off the bench has been quite good. And I didn't think he was too bad the last day either. Maybe the expectation around him is always that bit more, but I think he does a decent job in that role behind midfield. I would have always thought that was the role for him. And it's something he does well. He's a very, very good tackler. He's a good distributor. Obviously, obviously around some Croke Park games, maybe for, you know, at the tail end of a year, it hasn't always gone for him, but he's a decent asset in around there. I think he'd be hard to leave out. I know there'd be a groundswell of opinion that they should be. Personally, I wouldn't. I would play him. I would play him in that midfield defensive role, dropping back with a number 11 on his back. And I think it's something that he does well. But obviously, there probably is a line of thought that we need to do something different here, and it may revolve around Aidan's role within the team. But in the short term, I think he'd be on it.
Colm, just quickly on this, like, when I speak to including Galway football fans, Kerry football fans and Dublin football fans, I'll take those three who interact with Mayo a lot, they always have a huge amount of different opinions on Aidan O'Shea, and a lot of them are negative, and a lot of the time they'll be telling us he's the problem, he's what's wrong. Why does he attract that kind of attention when he's so disruptive to those very same teams, when he can dominate them at times? It's a strange one, because he does attract a lot of opinions.
Yeah, I suppose there's a level of expectation around him that he is, you know, obviously he's a big man, he has a presence there, and there's an expectation around him all the time that he's going to cut loose, and he has delivered performances against, you know, maybe not against the strongest opposition, that, you know, against Sligo and players like that, but he's also played well again in that defensive role. I mean, if you go back to the 2014 All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, when he led that comeback, and Joe Brolly, who's obviously his most ardent critic, if you go back to that particular post-match analysis where he said he is the best player in the game right now. And that's, they're his words. So how that moved from where he was to the opinion about him 2 years later, obviously the weight of expectation is high around him, but he does perform. He does perform a decent role there. And I suppose there's always an easy target when a team is losing, and it just seems to be him that on the biggest days he hasn't always delivered.
Sure, start him against Galway or not at the moment?
I think bring him off the bench. I think I can see Cullen's point about current form, being able to do a job in behind the midfield, dropping back from centre forward. But I see more, and I'd be agreeing more with the point of trying something different against Galway. I think I've been very impressed with him coming off the bench. The lift he's given the team, it creates a bit of panic for the opposition. And I think if you don't start him as well, I think the opposition management are always going to be looking ahead, planning ahead for the inevitability for when Aidan O'Shea comes off the bench, and what are they going to do at that stage. And that'll bring a bit of chaos into the game. Obviously, on the flip side of that coin is that if you're losing the game and you fall behind early on, you know, say if you're playing against a big win, the opposition team rack up a big score and the game is almost gone, and you bring Aidan O'Shea into the game, then, you know, that's not the time when you need him. You need him in the game when the game's in the melting pot. You know, a point ahead, a point down, and where he can get stuck in around the middle, throw around his physicality, and just put a bit of focus on himself, so it'll free up a few of the other Mayo players to do their thing. Obviously, there's such a strong argument to start him because we're missing some key men, missing some key leaders. But I just what I've seen this year, with him coming off the bench, what he does to the Mayo team, what he does to the opposition team, I'd be leaving him off till halftime.
Stephen, same question, but also, can you just, for the crack, throw in a theory that a year after maybe the last Ballardrine senior title, like, would you, if someone had tried to sell you a role where you knew you were good enough to start, but they wanted you impacting a game, like, how would you have, as a competitive player like yourself, how would you have kind of managed that in your head, even, and if you kind of also knew you could help them win a title that way?
In 2013, is it?
Any year. I'm just wondering.
Off, but
New Year's,
I just
want
to close there in 2012. I told him to scratch. Mike took over in 2012. Mike took over in 2013 after we won the county title.
Yeah.
He played me wing forward that year, the lunatic, which I wasn't particularly pleased about, considering that I got used to not running at all at cornerback or fullback. You do what you need to do for the team, and you accept what. You accept what the manager has, you know, whatever plan that is. And look, you're not going to like it sometimes, but ultimately, he's, you know, Aidan's a good guy. He's a good team man. I have to say, I think his reaction this year has been stellar. I think, you know, again, you know, you don't know how players are going to react in this situation. This is a guy who has been a guaranteed starter for the best part of, what, 12, 13 years now. And, you know, it can be a difficult pill to swallow because players, you know, they have egos and they have, you know, they have opinions and they have a lot of pride. But I think his reaction has been tremendous, and, you know, he's impacted every game this year. He's come in a really, really positive manner, and, you know, Gerard touching it there. He has been excellent coming off the bench. I thought he played well last weekend, I have to say. You know, look, people are focused on one or two things, you know, namely the score at the end. But look, that was a mismatch situation. If that happened in the third minute, you know, Stephen O'Brien would slip the vast majority of guys. He shouldn't have been put in that situation ultimately. But like, he did well, you know, he was robust around the middle. You know, he won a couple of frees. He hit a great ball in for Ryan's mark. That, you know, so like, Aidan played quite well. Question is, again, do we start him or not against Galway? And again, I agree with you on that. Like, it's very, it's difficult to know at this point, and I think injuries would play into it a lot. He's tended to play really well against Galway. He's had a lot of really good games for Mayo against Galway. I think if we have enough guys on board and back and fit, I think he could offer more coming off the bench in the last 20. Coming off the bench fresh, when the game has slowed down, with his power and physicality, he's turning into what I would classify as a great closer. And he mightn't want to hear that, or mightn't want to see that, or he mightn't see that as, you know, he mightn't ultimately want that as the role for himself. But these roles are becoming more and more important in the modern game. And I think if we have the personnel fit and available, I would like that we hold him back, you know, to really close out that game. And I think that's where he's been most effective this year. But look, he could start as well.
All right, I'm going to get both of you in the clubhouse section. The second job for you guys is to pick out maybe one other performance from the last day that maybe has been unheralded from a Mayo perspective that we're talking about. We'll quickly go through that in the extended section of the podcast. But moving on, the mention of a new sponsor, Nigel Reap Office Supplies. Yes, friend of the podcast, Nigel Reap as well. But his main day job, as you well know, most of you will know, is in the printing business. Posters, signs, lotto booklets. That'll speak to a lot of our GA listeners. He can get it all done for you up in Knockmore. Give him a shout at 086-858-6572. 086-858-6572. Nigel Reap Office Supplies has come on board for our Mayo News Football Podcast weekly show to support us this year. And we thank him for that. Of course, he sponsored one of our Players of the Week awards during the club championship last year, and we'll be chatting to him later in the season, no doubt, too, about all things football. In the meantime, big thanks to Nigel for joining the team, so to speak. Got to talk about next weekend, and the good news is Colm Keyes was up in Omagh last weekend, so he watched Tyrone in a bit of bother. Six players left the squad as well. Colm, give me an overview for you on where Tyrone are right now as Mayo head north.
They're in a little bit of trouble, but then stacked against where they were after last year's league semi-final, I think we have to have a perspective on that. They conceded six goals in that particular game, and within, 3 months, they were All-Ireland champions for only the fourth time. So you have to put a bit of perspective in that. Right now, I think there's still a little bit of a carryover from the All-Ireland title win around Tyrone. I'm not so sure the cup has just been left down just yet, and I suppose you could say, well, they're entitled to celebrate, they don't win them too often, and you'd say all that, but again, championship is just around the corner. Tyrone have a game in 4 weeks' time or whatever it is, so there probably has been a longer carryover for them in that respect. They're not Dublin, who used to just draw a line on January the 1st or whenever it was, and that was it. Dublin were well used to, so they obviously have a lot of commitments. Does that affect performance? Probably not directly, but indirectly, maybe just minds aren't as focused, and they just maybe are not as focused as they were. You take Kieran McGeary, he's player of the year. I think he's been sent off in two of his games, including the Armagh match. And he missed one through suspension, and he's been taken off in his last two games. He was taken off at halftime last Sunday. That's your current footballer of the year, so that's not a great return. It's not a great follow-on from him. I would also say Conor Myler, while he was good enough against Kildare, I was at that game too, not really that prominent last weekend, not in the way that he was certainly at the latter end or even throughout last year's championship. So they were probably 1-2 in the country last year, and they're not really going well. Pádraig Hamsey, he's having trouble with discipline too. He was immersed in the Armagh row, and then he got his black card and his yellow card for bumping Cormac Costello on the concrete. Needless card to pick up. It may not have cost them. It may not, because the momentum was still there. They had a bit of wind, but he was an extra pair of legs to track, to hunt down Dublin players when they were playing keep ball, and that's where they really missed Hamsey. So a lot of their players. Peter Hart hasn't been nearly as prominent. Darren McCurry hasn't been as effective, and they're all their best players from last year. So it is a bit of a problem current form for them. Having said that, Having said that, they really know now where they are, that there's no cruise here. They really must go and win their next game, and that happens to be Mayo. So you would expect, even if it's a short turnaround, you would expect that there will be improvement from them, because as good as Dublin were in the first half, Tyrone were poor. Tyrone were poor the last day, and Darragh Canavan, he's probably their most prolific player at the moment, and he wasn't even featuring last year. He was only coming off the bench, obviously, because of an injury. So I think there's a bit of disciplinary problems within on the field there. They're getting involved in scrapes that they don't really need to, and I think it'll take a while for them to iron out those creases, but I do think there'll be improvement this weekend.
It's an old school All-Ireland hangover, and we haven't seen them for so long because it's just a thing of the past, really, aren't they?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say, like, I wouldn't even describe it as a hangover. It's probably a carryover of commitments that there's still that. I wouldn't imagine, and I've probably heard that line hasn't been drawn, it certainly wasn't drawn like in Dublin fashion, where just the cup doesn't appear after a certain day. I think that's entirely understandable for a county that hasn't won it often. Tyrone obviously won it in 2000, hasn't won it often. So there's probably a little bit of that there, that it was feasted on for a long. And as I said, to reiterate, perfectly understandable. But the difference is championship is a lot closer. So therefore teams are a lot more advanced in March 2022 than they would have been in March any other year because of the proximity of the championship. The whole cycle has changed. So from that respect, this period now is what late April probably used to be in if we call it old money. So that's the difference, that in terms of the cycles of training and preparation, it's 6 weeks ahead of where it normally would have been.
Sure, in the weirdest way, it doesn't feel like a grudge match, despite the fact that this team just beat Mayo in an All-Ireland final a few months ago. Do you agree with that, or do you feel there is a little bit of hangover there for Mayo and a point to prove?
I don't think so. You're never going to get retribution from a league game, you know, no matter how big it's going to be. It's still the National League, and you know, when it comes down to it, a championship, in particular an All-Ireland final, will always trump it. Look, it'll still be nice to beat them. Mayo will want to go out, beat them well, put in a performance. But, you know, as Cullen pointed out there, this Tyrone team is nowhere near the Tyrone team that we played last year. They're kind of out of sorts. You know, I think beating them, I don't think it'll make Mayo's supporters, Mayo players, the Mayo management feel any better about what happened last year. I think the line is dug fairly deep past that, and this is a new season. I think they'll just be looking at it as an opportunity to get another victory and try and march on to a National League final. I don't think they're going to get too much caught up in trying to get one back from the All-Ireland final defeat, certainly not.
Drakey, on form, we can be confident, I think, before we close off this chat.
Yeah. Well, look, if you take last weekend from Tyrone's perspective, it was very, very poor. And they've had issues, obviously, Colin pointed out, they've had issues throughout the league. Discipline is the biggest one, I have to say, you know. Very ragged in that regard, and very tempestuous. And again, the Hampsey one baffled me, you know, in terms of the captain, you know, the discipline he showed last year and has consistently shown, like, just stupid carry on altogether. Like, they cut a frustrated look at the moment, I have to say. So I would I'd be hopeful that we can get back on the saddle at the weekend, but there will be a reaction from Tyrone, there's no question about it. They are an enigma in that way. Like, they can go from the, you know, from the god awful to the exceptional in the space of a week, and they've done that time and time again. That's been one of their calling cards over the years. So I do expect a reaction from them this weekend, but on form, you know, we're in a better place than they are at the moment, and I think we're in good shape in relation to the game.
Colm, great job on your column today. As we record, this is Tuesday. I really enjoyed your overview on what the last couple of years have been in terms of GA financing and investment in intercounty teams. Ger, I'm going to get you to come in off the back of this, because it's something you and I were talking about in a podcast before COVID, because it was such a big story at that point in time. and it got lost in the eaters. But speaking to that, Colm, is this, you know, it's been said to me this week, the row isn't about the row, that old phrase. Is this something that has been boiling and simmering for a while in terms of money, how much money has been spent on the intercounty game? And has it kind of come to a head in a strange way? Because it doesn't really seem like a clear cut argument. It doesn't even seem like the type of row I thought was going to happen between the GA and the GPA. But it seems to be pretty important as well.
Well, Rob, it shaped very much this way. 2 years ago, as I mentioned in the piece, the Director General, Tom Ryan, had referenced that it was neither sustainable or desirable to have a collective bill for training all the teams. And that includes hurling, football, and it includes minor under 20 and maybe a bit of academy. That's universally the way these are, all these figures are audited. But it was around 30 million, the collective bill for intercounty preparation. That's 30 million audited, official. I'm sure there's a little bit more than that escapes out into it as well. But the GPA shot back very, very quickly, Paul Flynn at the time, reminding everyone that an intercounty game was the driver and the vehicle for everything. Now, that's which comes first, the chicken or the egg, in that respect, because obviously it's the clubs that nurture and produce the players, and they need facilities and they need coaching structures that need investment and all of that. So which comes first? That's a different fundamental argument, really, around all of this. While the intercounty game takes in the money is then reinvested to replenish and the recycling, the cycle of life, if you like, for Gaelic games, the money pours back down, so this can be replenished. But so COVID struck then, and they had to come to a different arrangement around expenses, and it was a very controlled arrangement too, in that there was only 32 in a squad, not 38 or 40 or anything like that. They only pay expenses for 32. They only pay 50 cent a mile down from 65. GA would pay all that centrally, keep it off the county's books, and they'd just pay it directly and centrally. And it would only be for three times a week, two training and a match or whatever that sequence would be. And also a fiver for a post-match meal, and that was everybody. So your caterer had to come and do agreements. It was all these agreements, even down to what you'd pay for a bus. And it worked out very well for the GA and I suppose the counties, in that the bills were kept down to, I think it was 17 or 18 million and just short of 20. So they're the figures for 2020 and 2021. But now normal service has resumed, and obviously the GPA have gone and pitched and say, well, we want a restoration of what the framework was in place for 2019. And it's not up to us to curtail. It's not up to our players to carry that burden. You must legislate for it. And the GA must legislate. If they want less training sessions, they probably have to put it in rule at this stage to say the most training sessions that any intercounty team can take is, if they want four, I'm sure managements and players would want five. So that would be two pitch sessions and two gym sessions that they would cater for expenses. But anything beyond that, and some counties do go six times a week, and they might even incorporate a seventh for an extra recovery session or whatever it is. Everyone's different. But I think the whole idea that teams would require their managements would require their players for any more than four sessions, given what emerged in the ESRI report on demands on intercounty players in 2018. I think there was probably the GA and the GPA would have been looking for ways and a route to maybe curtail back on that and on the 31 hours per week. Maybe the GPA not so much, in that they were flagging the 31 hours per week to show, well, this is how much we commit and we'll probably need a bit more out of this. But the GA's idea of it was, we need to cut back here. And this measure of capping the number of sessions that they will make a contribution to, as opposed to allowing how many sessions, they make a contribution of 18 cent in every 65 cent per mile for the four sessions. And after that, it's up to the county to fund it. So obviously the stronger counties will be able to fund it better. So it's reached disagreement. There's disagreement there over that, but it will probably be fixed with legislation somewhere up the line.
I'm just thinking of Tommy Conroy throwing in a few Sigerson Cup games or anyone else, Fionn McDonagh, has on top of possibly five sessions. Mother of God. Gerry, you felt for a while the spending was running out of control. What's your thoughts on where we are right now?
you know, it's still creeping out of control. I don't think it's changed ever so much. I can remember John Prenti beating on this drum a few years back about how the juggernaut of intercounty spending, and it just doesn't seem to be slowing down in any way. And obviously it's understandable in certain ways, but you know, I just feel this whole argument from the GPA has just been a small bit rushed. I don't know. I was kind of caught a bit on the hop from it when I heard about it last week. Obviously, it's disappointing to hear that they're still waiting on expenses, but you know, the proposal to pay for 4 days' expenses is in my view enough. And it goes back again to the juggernaut that is the intercounty game. You know, if you're going to be paying for 5 days, they're going to be wanting 6 days, and if they're going to be paying 6 days, they're going to make an argument, why aren't we just paying the 7 days? And it's going to get out of hand. I think the GAA are right to push back on this. I think they can't let the GPA win this one on them. Maybe that's the wrong way of describing that. You know, I picked up a line from Tom Parsons listening to his interview on, I think it was on Off the Ball during the week, and he made the point that you know, some of the intercounty players were frustrated or annoyed when they heard the news that the GAA made a surplus of I think it was 13 million, and correct me if I'm wrong on that. And you know, but kind of hinting to the point that some of this 13 million should go back into intercounty players. And Cullum just touched on it there. Like, you know, in my opinion, that's an absolute, completely wrong way to be looking at that. Like, that money needs to go back into the grassroots of the game where it's needed. You know, the majority of the intercounty teams, definitely from all the big teams at least, you know, the players are not losing money playing intercounty football. You know, I think I've made this point on this podcast before, or maybe in a column. You know, certainly in Mayo, in all the top counties, I can't talk for the smaller ones, but certainly in all the top counties, players are not losing money playing for intercounty football. They're very well looked after. Expenses isn't bad. You know, their meals are paid for. They get top medical work with physios and doctors and all that. You know, I just think it's a bit of a stretch. I just think it's too far from the GPF.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms, you can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Just a couple of points there. I heard that 13 million figure. That's not my understanding, having been at the briefing and looked at the accounts, as anyone can look at the accounts. My understanding of the surplus for 2021 would have been it was 1.9 million and tied into the loss of 27.1 million last year. Over the 2 years, that's the GAA out for 25.2 million. So the GAA can be sometimes a bit slow about putting that side of it across. I suppose they didn't want to last weekend when they reacted to the GPA's moves. But that is the reality, that over the 2 years, 25.2 million has been lost because of COVID. Now, a lot of counties have done very well out of COVID too, and I'm sure the GPA have noticed that between state supports and COVID employment subsidy schemes and things like that, they've done well. And obviously with the expenses for the counties taken out of their hands by and large mileage, they've done very well. And some of the counties have returned very, very big profits of over €1 million. So that's another point probably worth noting as well. So but sometimes the GAA just didn't want to put that across. Didn't want to put that across so much.
Fascinating. Stephen, is there any have you any kind of thoughts on from the player's side, from Tom Parsons is trying to argue, not looking for pay for play, but don't want to have to pay to play, was his kind of pull quote?
Yeah, so there's two sides to that. The top counties, the players are absolutely not out of pocket, right? That's the reality. They can say all they want, whether they're getting paid for three sessions a week or whatnot. If you're one of the top teams, you're well looked after. I'd be more concerned for the guys. Look, the guys playing Lorimar or Record, you know, hurling or the lower echelons of the football championship. You know, are these guys getting looked after as they should? And that's an important point here. But the GAA need to take control of this situation. Players, first of all, in my opinion, shouldn't be out of pocket. But in a scenario where the GAA are saying we'll pay out for three or four sessions versus a situation where a county manager can pull a guy like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days a week. I remember a scenario, I think in Pat Gilroy's time, Dublin were doing double sessions at the beginning of the year, 6 a.m. in the morning and 6 or 7 in the evening. So you could have guys doing, you know, 9, 10, 12 sessions a week. Now, the distances they travel, you know, pale in insignificance to, you know, a county like Mayo or wherever. But the reality is here, the GAA need to take control in terms of what counties are allowed to do in relation to pulling their players for training. So they need to, you know, put it in law that county teams can only assemble X amount of times during the week, right? And outside of that, you know, you can be sanctioned. And until they do that, we're going to have this argument rumble on. So they need to take control from that perspective. I completely agree. Players should not be out of pocket in any way, in any circumstance. And in the main, they're not. But there would be some counties and situations where they are. So this needs to go down the legislative route. It needs to be put in, you know, it needs to be put in law. Counties need to be limited in terms of how often they can take their players during the week. And then we need to put an appropriate reimbursement facility for that particular piece of legislation. And then there you have it. Argument ended, done and dusted. But yeah, it's an unfortunate situation.
Colm, final word on it. And with that in mind, just one other point as well. Final word. And also, do you see it escalating from the GPA's point of view?
No, because I don't think the difference is great between what the GAA are suggesting and what the GPA ultimately. Obviously, the GPA want limitlesses, but there probably aren't that many counties that go over the four sessions. But I suppose we should distinguish between what's an actual training on pitch session, and then I suppose incorporated into that is players' gym work. They're also covered. They're expensed to travel to and from a gym to conduct a session there. So obviously that's incorporated into it. And I suppose if a player requires physio and he needs to travel for that physio, well, that's incorporated into that too. So really, there has to be distinctions drawn. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you have to legislate, and Stephen reiterated that point too. You won't be able to curb or curtail the number of sessions in that regard, but you will be able to curb the payments around them, which I think is where the GAA wants. But they have to actually specify that in rule to be able to accommodate. And you're right, the top counties will not be out because they are very, very well resourced. If Mayo want to train 5 or 6 times a week and the GAA are only making a contribution to 4 of those sessions, well, the Mayo County Board and their lengthy number of backers from all around the world and all around the country are going to be able to support that. So are Kerry. So are all the Division One teams comfortably. And Stephen is right. It's at the lower end of the scale that really the GPA are most concerned about here. But I'm not so sure many of those teams would be out more than 3 or 4 times a week either. So really, this is there's practicalities around it, but it's in some cases it's a theoretical dispute too. In that, you know, that they're looking for limitless, but in many cases it will never go beyond 4 anyway. And that's why I don't think there's really a huge gap here. I did hear a suggestion that at different stages of the season, you could move it from 3 to 5. I think it was Tom Parsons suggested that. I also think, and the GAA have started to make the first moves towards this, that there should be some financial equalization. So the further you go in a championship 1 year, you get less expenses the next year. It's almost like a draft, an NFL draft. So the further you go, the more you're financially penalized, so that things can eat. You can't do as much the following year, or at least the theory is you can't do as much. You have to go and find the money elsewhere. But GAA's point should be, well, we're not giving it to you. We're giving it to some of these other developing counties, and we're going to see, you know, can we subvent them in a way that can improve their standards? And I think that should come in. There's already on the fringes of that, in terms of a first time I've seen it, is that there's an expense grant being paid this year that's linked to commercial performance. So in other words, if you only earn so much commercially in a given year, well, then they're going to give an extra bit of funding for that. So that's the start of it, and I think it will develop over time.
That's brilliant. And it is something, and you can appreciate, Colm, on a Mayo football podcast, that we don't have the same kind of, you know, your kind of drive to talk about and all that kind of stuff. Because luckily enough, over the last 12 years, since this podcast started, Mayo have been up at the top echelons, and that's fine. But when you speak to people, I've spoken in the last 2 weeks, I've spoken to someone very involved in Sligo and someone very involved in Offaly, and you see what they're dealing with in terms of player exodus, in terms of, like, you take Offaly, I mean, two or three players from the senior panel when they're at a promotion from Division 3 to Division 2, an All-Ireland title in the county. I mean, that's the type of stuff that have Mayo transfixed and every player ready to go.
I often, up to 2020, it was phenomenal the amount of Mayo players that actually stayed within the system. Very, very few ever departed or walked away from 2011 or 2012 right up to 2020. And obviously there was that mass exodus. You just, the turnover of players is always a lot less in Division 1, and after that it's a sliding scale. And the obvious reason is they lack hope and they lack optimism and they lack resources.
And those of us of our age, you know, I certainly can remember days when Mayo weren't in that position. But listen, let's finish the podcast this week with one answer questions, lads. Get yourselves ready. I only want one answer. First of all, I'm going to ask you who's going to win between Galway and Mayo right now. You have to predict it now, as of now. And just tell me who's going to win the league and who's going to get relegated. That's all. Starting going around the table on the first question. Galway, Mayo. Start with you, Ger. Who's going to win?
Mayo.
Still confident. Simple.
Is this Colm a one-word answer, Rob? Or do you?
Well, you can throw a sentence in. You can throw a sentence in. Mayo, without question.
I think Mayo. I think form wise, I think we have a good record over Galway recently. I think we match up pretty well for them, and I think they're going to beat them. I know the Galway are playing very well. I've been impressed with them, but you know, there's a big difference between Division 1 and Division 2, as we found out last year.
Stephen Drake, I don't think you need more than one word. This one, you were writing Galway off last week.
Mayo, and they're a better team. That's it.
Colm, just mainly curious from your point of view, do Galway have a chance?
Mayo. I think Mayo on form, and they're just that bit ahead in terms of conditioning and everything. I think Galway have a little bit of catching up yet to do there. So you also asked about the league, Rob.
Yeah, who's
I think
your
Kerry
final?
Will win the league.
Oh, Kerry will win it.
Successive year. I think Kerry will win it out, and I think Kildare and Tyrone will go down.
Mm. Stephen, will we make the league final? Yeah, it looks pretty good at the moment. Are you confident?
Yeah, I think we will make the league final, and I'm going to say Mayo win the league. Yeah, and go down. I think Kildare will go down. The other one's tough. After last weekend, I think Dublin will stay up. So I'm going to go. Yeah, I think Mayo. I've gone for Mayo to beat Tyrone this weekend. So yeah, I'll go Kildare Tyrone.
Jerry, any changes on that? Can Mayo win the league, or who are you predicting for the league?
I think Kerry are going to win the league, and Tyrone and Kildare again. Just impressed with Dublin last week, and think they're going to get stronger. So I think they'll pip that battle.
All right, join us, Patreon listeners, in the clubhouse section of the podcast. For everyone else, we'll speak to you in a week when hopefully Mayo will have booked their league final place with a week to spare. Who knows? Results could go their way if they do beat Tyrone. If Armagh lose, they're all but there, but we'll wait and see how all that pans out. Talk to you soon.